Welcome to the second phase of the internationally acclaimed Positive Personal Power Podcast. This webcast is devoted to pillars of success and philosophies of life and the hardcore tools you must have to achieve success in business and life. Distinguished and successful, internationally known business and thought leaders Nathaniel Schooler and Stephen J. Manning give you their hardcore tools to succeed in business and life. Schooler and Manning are as hardcore about success as boot camps in the military and training camps in professional sports. Now, here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
Wow. Well, I am privileged today to be joined by Stephen J. Manning again on our third episode here on the Pillars of Success, which I am thoroughly enjoying recording and telling people about at the moment. So, yeah, I wanted to talk about how an industry was born, the Megaforce Digigraph. And Stephen J. Manning has created a number of different industries, a number of different entrepreneurial ventures over his decades in business. And, you know, he sold over $47 billion worth of goods and services and consultancy. So, Stephen, welcome once again. And what on earth is the Megaforce Digigraph?
Well, I'll be glad to tell you, if you don't mind a bit of a story. After all, you and I are storytellers. Megaforce Digigraph is something that never existed until the day it existed. I created the words. Megaforce I didn't, but Digigraph I did. I have no idea what it is. I just thought it sounded really cool, high-techy stuff. And having said that, let me digress to a topic we discussed in a prior podcast, which I think is really, really, really critical to success. You and I agree on that. And then, you know, as I said, you are all familiar, all of you watching this, listening to this, are familiar to this great English piece of wisdom. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Now, I, on the other hand, don't see it quite that way, because I don't want a gift horse without looking its mouth in case I end up with a really big dental bill. But the way I see it differently is never ignore a horse that's coming your way. Now, that could in fact be a pretty slick gift horse. That said, there's a tremendous piece of nonsense that's been fed to all of us from the beginning of time, and it continues to be fed, which is opportunities are just around the corner. They're knocking at your door. I feel about that the same way I feel about the wisdom in fortune cookies. I look at it and say, okay, what corner? Let me go there. I don't need anybody knocking. And as I said a couple days ago, I happen to know who writes that stuff for the fortune cookies. You know, it's not brilliant Chinese philosophers. Actually, it's the print salesman for the factory that manufactures those things, special machinery. Those men and women create that brilliant wisdom. It's not Confucius. So if I think that, if I wait for opportunities to come knocking on the door, there's a little problem there. And again, you know, I talked about the 20,000 books in print, the great brains that tell us how to think and how to feel. Tony Robbins, who just wrote a book which refutes everything he's ever said, which is wonderful. Bottom line, if you wait for opportunities, kind of the same thing as, if you believe that, why don't you just go out in the backyard, close your eyes real tight, go like this, and imagine yourself, wish yourself to be taller, better looking, richer, etc. Don't know how to tell you this. It's just never going to happen. Now, we're going to get to the Digigraph. The Megaforce Digigraph. Some of the stuff I sold over all these years, with all the billions of dollars worth of that stuff that I sold, some of that stuff kind of make me think about this great lyric. This R&B group, Ray Goodman and Brown, I think created this, and maybe it was the Bee Gees. It doesn't matter. Which goes something like, "How can love so right be so wrong?" So it seems to me that in my little business life, I turned it upside down a bit. So in my life, how can love so wrong turn out to be so right? I go for a stitchograph. So, a while ago, I was asked to speak at this conference in Lausanne, Switzerland, to a bunch of people. I think memory serves 1,300 folks around the world, all accomplished marketing people and CEOs. And the topic was how do you create a new business in a developing market? Okay, there were 11 speakers. 10 were all from multinationals, accomplished businesses around the world, who made the decision, okay, now we're going to go into Latin America. Now we're going to Micronesia. And how do you do that? Now, everybody had the plan. There was a plan. It's a master plan. There was funding. So, hey, I'm the guy. So I go in country with $30 million budget. I hire a bunch of people, do all that research for 2 or 3 years. Then I write a great report based upon which they may or may not do anything. And then they invited me. Now, they invited me for two reasons. One of them is one of the organizers knew me. And two, they really want to have one among the 11 who actually spent their own money doing something new and different. That was me. So I was the last guy among 11 speakers to speak after 2 days, which is dumb. Don't ever be the last guy, because by then people just want to go home. And then, so I was a designated victim. No. That goes back to what was the grand plan? All the other speakers had a grand plan. All the other speakers had, they had it all cool. I had no plan. It all started when my mom called me one day and she said, "Oh, honey, can you do something for me?" Okay, so I created an industry based on my mommy calling me, telling me that she needed me to do something, which I reluctantly did. Cost me a ton of money. But, okay, so by all accounts, Matt, and stop me if I'm boring you here, by all accounts, I was pretty much of a good-sized operator by then, a few billion dollars behind me in my rearview mirror. I actually just started a new direct, highly promotional direct marketing business again, doing what I knew best. Interjecting relevant stuff here. I'm going to assume that a lot of your readers know who Mel Brooks is. Movie producer, actor. He created a great movie called The Producers, starring Zero Mostel. We'll get to that in a minute. Now, my mommy. The problem was that she knew this family from before the war, and the guy's mother-in-law and her, I mean, I'm not going to get into decades of history, but she was such nice people. And the dude had a family here, 3 kids, wife, and he needs a job. Can you give him a job? Okay, I can, yeah, then we have lots of people, sure. Of course, 3 weeks later, I promoted him to supervisor. It turned out he had a couple of master's degrees. He was a Hungarian national. By the way, those 3 little kids, the oldest boy, I got him into Stanford. The oldest boy is had a worldwide everything for his massive tech company. The young girl, who barely spoke English when I got to Berkeley, she also has a PhD in God knows what. I lost track of the little one. For all I know, she's painting, throwing stuff on famous paintings. I don't know. Anyway, so this guy comes to work for me. It's great. 2 weeks later, he announces that he has a problem. He's illegal. He's in the country illegally. Can I help him out? Now, wait a minute now. Of the literally tens of thousands of people I've employed in Southern California, 100% were legal. At least they had all the proper documentation. This guy has nothing. Mm-hmm. Okay, I called my mother. How can you do this to me? oh, they're such nice people, great children. And, oh, God, the guilt thing. My mother was very good at that. I said, okay. I said, the only way, now I couldn't afford, he couldn't afford a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And the lawyer I had was a former chief counsel for the INS. His minimum retainer was $200,000. I said, whoa, baby, $2,000 maybe. No. So I said, I need to prove to the federal government that I need you. You. You Hungarian dude, not the other Hungarians. You. So I said to this guy, I want you to write 1,000 letters, fill out file cabinets with paper, to show the feds we're really trying and I need you. At some point I said, I need to spend more of my hard-earned money to make my mommy happy. Because of course, you know, we must do that. It's the cosmic law. And I said, if the feds ever come in, look at what I'm doing, they're gonna say, you are the dumbest businessman in the world. What are you doing? Clearly, you're trying to justify. So I said to my guy, Peter, mm-hmm. we need to do something along the lines of what we do. We're in direct response advertising. We're going to create an ad. We're going to run it in Hungary. We'll buy the media. And when it fails, we'll say, see, we tried. Now, that was my idea of a Mel Brooks play. Because the producers were centered around this massive failed actor, producer's name was Zero Mostel, the actor. And he romanced 1,000 older ladies and fleeced some of their money by selling them 10%, 20, 30, 40, 50, 17, 28% of this new play.
He sold. Oh, I think I might have seen that actually. It's a good film.
4,000% of this play. And then he went out to find the worst script he could find. It was a musical called Springtime for Hitler. Found the worst actor in history, and they staged this Broadway play that was never going to get past the first act. Now, you know, of course, what happened, right? What happened is it became a massive success. So I said, you know what? Mel Brooks has an idea there. We're going to create an ad. We're going to run it. When it fails, I can see we tried. So I'm sitting there saying, you know, I got to create a deal that's going to go absolutely nowhere because I'm not going to go to Hungary, run a business. I'm kind of busy 20 hours a day doing what I do here. But then my mommy was a wonderful woman. And I said, so I'm watching television one late night. I'm watching an awful movie called Megaforce. Now, even in Europe, you know, Chuck Norris, right? Big time action star. And he did all these movies. Chuck Norris is leading the Green Berets are leading the Navy SEALs in battle. They blow up everything and everybody and are successful. I'm watching this terrible movie, middle of the night, and how the hell is this? He's wearing this massive military watch. He keeps looking at it. And things got dials and stuff. And I said, there's a product. I can do something with that. So I said, I literally sat down, might have been 11:30 at night, I always had a drafting table in my office. I sat down, and in about 45 minutes, I created a one-page ad in English for this massive military watch that can talk to you, tell you where you are, stroke you, whatever. It was the most indispensable piece of warfare in the history of mankind. And I said, I got to give a name, Megaforce. Well, anyway, I can't do that because they're going to sue me. You got to come up with another name. The digital name. I said, Megaforce Digigraph. That's where the watch was born. Megaforce Digigraph. This watch, by the time the picture, you know, clip art in Microsoft Word? Okay, little clip art. And then I got to come up with a dial. So I ripped up 10 different dials of the internet and combined them. And now I had a dial. It had to be this big because it had 47 functions. 47, could wash your car.
Wow, that's a lot of fun.
And it was this incredible watch with this massive band. So I wrote this ad in English, a page, about the Megaforce Digigraph. It's going to change your life. My God, it was incredible. And I said, okay. And this is what the Navy, this is what Chuck Norris wore. This is what Navy SEALs wore. You must have one. Now I write this in English, mind you. And this is creating it for an ad that's going to run in one paper, one time, in Budapest, in Hungary.
Okay.
There's a couple problems with it. One of them is the thing didn't exist. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was just an image I created on my laptop in the middle of the night. No problem, because it's going to fail miserably. Then I wrote this one page for this non-existent, incredible, awesome survival system. It was a watch. This was a survival system. And I wrote that in English. Now, it needed to translate that thing. Mm-hmm. So you don't translate advertising. You adopt it. You translate the words, it's awful. You adopt it. Nah, we don't need to do that, because this is going to fail, right? Okay. So my guy finds a guy who's a chemistry professor mm-hmm. at California State University in Northridge. He was a native Hungarian dude, been teaching here for 25 years. Hey, can you translate this? Who best to translate advertising than a chemistry professor?
That's crazy.
Okay? It wasn't Gray Advertising, J. Walter Thompson, Saatchi, Shayadeh. I knew all these people. I did business with them. They were friends of mine. No. Mm-hmm. The chem professor. I remember paying him $200. He was so grateful, you wouldn't believe it. Okay, now we have an ad in Hungarian, which I speak Hungarian, but that's different, you know. Even that, I will tell you that even I could read it in Sart. And this guy wanted to have my children for $200. I said, tell me more where this came from. So now I had a product that did not exist. I had an ad that was surely a failure. And to ensure the failure, I priced it at what was the average take-home pay for Hungarian for the month. Who the hell is going to buy that watch for 1 month take-home pay? Mm-hmm. And then I went south. As you know, by then I created 1,500 sweepstakes and involvement devices and all that stuff. I couldn't help myself. Throw those sweepstakes on it. Give away $10,000. By the way, whoa. I did understand, wait a minute, in Hungary, there was no law yet that said no purchase required. So I said, if you buy, you enter the sweepstakes. In the United States, they handcuff your butt. Anyway, so now I have an ad which sucks from every, it's terrible from every perspective.
It's okay, sucks. You can use sucks. That's fine.
Nobody will ever buy the thing for that much money. So I said to him, mistake number five. I said, Peter, find somebody who's going to find the cheapest rag in the city. Mm-hmm. And buy the cheapest ad, regrettably, it's a page, for the least amount of money. And then I'm done with it.
Okay.
Well, who best to buy the advertising? Who best to place the media? But a failed lawyer, a friend of his in Budapest. Guy was a failed lawyer. How do you fail as a lawyer? That's a special trick. This guy was a failed lawyer. So he called his friend. His friend said, what do you mean? He was really that bright. Long story short, he bought a page in the worst rag, cheapest rag we could find. Mm-hmm. So courtesy of my mother, I paid the chem professor $200. And I paid $1,500 for this page in an awful rag. A throwaway with a circulation of 300,000. And I forgot all about it for a week. Until my guy came in and said, his name was Peter. His guy, Peter, another Peter, about 27% of the Hungarians are called named Peter. He came and said, Peter called and wants to know what to do with the orders. Because we did have a coupon. Place your order here. And in that time of the war, remember, 1990, 91.
Wow.
There were no checking accounts. The Iron Curtain just fell down. I was the first American to launch private business there.
There was no iPhone. There was nothing. You had a Casio watch with a calculator.
And everything got paid with drafts in quadruplicate, quintuplicate, rubber stamps. You went to the bank to pay that $12. So that was easy. That's so easy to buy. Oh, by the way, we didn't have any phones, we didn't have any addresses, we had nothing. And I said, what orders? And I said, Peter, nobody in right mind is going to buy one of those for $45. They wouldn't buy it here for $45. He said, the other Peter says, we got like a handful. I said, no problem. Just refund them. That didn't exist in that part of the world. None of this guarantee a refund stuff. You lost your money. That's just refund them. I don't need a headache. Okay. Dude comes back in my office two days later, white as a sheet. I got a call from Peter. What do you do with the orders? I said, what orders? So we have 2,000 orders.
Wow.
I said, dude's trying to get a free plane ticket out of that one. This is nonsense. Peter is sweating. After all, this was a ruse. This was producers for his benefit. And figured I would throw him out the window physically. I said, okay, stop. So a couple days later, he contacted us, look, we got to do something. And he shows me a picture. It's the guy's bathtub. That guy and Hungry Peter, stacks of orders.
Wow.
I said, what? 4,000 orders? So it can't be.
What?
I said, it can't be. On my way to Los Angeles International Airport to catch a Lufthansa flight to Frankfurt and a connecting flight to Budapest, I had to see that. I spent $1,500 on an ad that made no sense, was clearly translated, for a product that didn't exist, and for a copy that was like, my friends would have looked at it and say, man, were you like stoned? I don't drink.
This is insane. This is insane.
I had fun doing that. Know that. And some guy of this, okay, so I got on a plane and I looked at it and said, great. Now, I will jump back and forth in just a little bit. By the way, that ad at the end of that cycle produced 11,000 orders. At $49 a piece, an expenditure of $1,500 plus the $200 of the chem professor. And
I'm dying here, Stephen. I'm dying to know.
I'm telling you.
What the hell did you do?
That's an excellent question. By then, I'd done a couple $1 billion of business in that world, not there, but here. And I said, I can't imagine a $1,500 media spend. That brings in $400,000. There's something
that's
very
insane.
Wrong here.
$400,000.
From a $1,500 media spent on a cheap ass little rat. Sorry. I want to see this for myself. Okay. I was there for exactly 2 days. And I came back. We didn't have a bank account. Took a month and a half to create one, build one. It was that kind of world then. And the only way I could do that is by bribing the head of the National Bank. The watch didn't exist. 3 weeks later, I got my first shipment of Megaforce Digigraph watches. The thing was made in Taiwan. The guts were made in Japan. The faceplate came from Italy, which I designed. And I'm telling you, it looked like dog doo-doo, but whoa, that is a military success. You have that watch, you can conquer the Sudeten land.
Yeah, you're just like Chuck Norris and Rambo.
Exactly. And then I went back to Budapest with a Samsonite suitcase full of Citibank traveler's checks. Couldn't wire money. That's all they expected. Now, I've had occasional issues taking money out of banks, but never putting it in. That required a month worth of negotiations and contracts. Long story short, Megaforce Digigraph, not so much later, 100% of the press showed up to an event we held because I decided to give away the $10,000. Didn't have to. I thought I should do that. Well, the poor woman who won this lived in a small city somewhere. She put her kids to school, paid for the clothes, bought the house from that $10,000. Never occurred to me that $10,000 is a lot of money. To me, it wasn't that much money. But anyway, Megaforce Digigraph. This story I'm telling you took place in the fall. Call September, October. By June, We had a 6-story building in Budapest. And then buildings around the region, various countries, and every single ad that I created was American product. Most of it existed. By then, I learned a lesson. It's too much work to now also have to, how do you buy 11,000 watches when they don't exist? Well, when you have $100 million worth of stuff before, you lean on people and say, look, there's more where this came from. Can you make the thing? Yeah, we'll make it. Forgive the language. I was genuinely pissed that the watches cost me $3.96. Those were very expensive. And then, again, 6 months later, 7 months later, we had more phone lines than anybody in the city because I put phone numbers in ads. We had bank accounts where people only think of us credit, which we never did. We had the little business in Hungary, 3 months later, 200 people. And then it was Slovakia and the Czech Republic and Poland and all that. And the product we sold was all American stuff that I sold here or saw here, liked here. And you know, there were a lot of people that were very grateful for the job because I paid a wage that was a hybrid. I paid a going wage. And then I had to do something called incentive, which did not exist. Hey, Nat, if you get done with this by midnight Sunday, you're getting 20 cents an order extra. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember you telling me this. I love this.
But you want to say you woke up to the fact that money showed up in their bank accounts Monday morning. Mm-hmm. So I'm making $50, $60, $70 a month. And also this Manning guy sends me $1,200.
Yeah, that's just insane. For people in that area, that's so much money.
But you see, the insanity thing was all the agencies, the Grays and Thompsons, well, let's do business together. And this is a lesson on outthink, outwork. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Rather, saddle the sucker and ride it. Everybody told me, oh, no, this is going to work. This is not America, Steve. Doesn't work that way here. And I said, you know what? I push this because people want some value. They're greedy. They want something for nothing. And this product promises great stuff, all my products. So we'll do it my way. If you guys want to do it, right, you pay for it. Mm-hmm. No, we had no takers. We didn't have an agency. And 100% of the ads were created here on my desk. And one of the happiest people in the whole project was my chem professor, because I kept having him translate that stuff.
Oh, wow. I bet he was so happy.
I said, wait a minute. The first one worked out pretty good. And I know it sucked. For $200, he did that. Now, let's just say that 6 months into it, we were selling vanity perfumes, for example. The bottles came from, I forget where. The labels came from Italy. The juice was made by the crazy chemist here in Van Nuys, California, 20 miles from here. And it was transported by the Canadians, because it's hard to do that. And who was filling the bottles? 500 housewives all over the countryside in Hungary. They filled 3 million. They filled 3 million bottles the first year. Okay. Wow. Megaforce Digigraph creates a whole damn industry for all the wrong reasons.
Let's say
that in the right then and there, this happened late fall. By March of next year, I was there for a week out of the month because all of a sudden we went from Megaforce Digigraph, because my mommy called, to multi-billion-dollar business in many countries. And it was, look, don't look a gift horse in the mouth, but when you've got to recognize that sucker's coming, and it's coming at you, is there some value to it? Do you think, oh, yeah. And it wouldn't be me talking to you or talking to anybody if I didn't hammer home one of the pillars of success, having to do homework. How much homework do you do? Not enough. And then you do some more, and then you do some more. And when you're done with that, you know you haven't done enough. Then you begin to become a shameless researcher. Now, this was backwards for me because I did it for a very different reason. Let's do this fail. We can say we've done it and walk away. Whoa. And then we walked in that forest, and you and I talked about this too. The forest is full of wolves. And then if you don't want to do that, don't walk in the forest. On the other hand, if you did the homework and you understand the liability and all that, then you did the homework. And then we became probably the best marketers in 7-8 countries because our homework was very different. My lawyer in Hungary, let's just say that all of a sudden I had a lot of friends because word got out. These guys are doing, look at the, who are they? Big buildings, you know?
That's amazing.
A young woman who's a member of parliament. That's homework. She told me they're passing a law against me, which they did every couple of weeks. We ignored them, you know. But Megaforce Digigraph created the direct response, the promotional direct response business of all of Central and Eastern Europe.
Wow.
There you go. Wow.
So how many people did you employ in Europe? I know you had a lot of people over in the States with 3 million square feet.
The biggest company associated with here, we had, I think, 5,000 people. In Europe, remember population and all that. In Europe, I think in Hungary, we had 250 some odd people, which makes it a pretty good size enterprise, particularly that we weren't manufacturing anything. Manufacturing businesses had a lot of people there. I ran a probably $10 million a year business in a little country called Slovakia.
Wow.
That was 3 people. Right? Because they were willing to work 24 hours a day for the great money they were making. The Czechs are different. If you do business in the Czech Republic, well, they are, by and large, they think of themselves as put upon cousins of Germans, and the Czechs look at themselves very differently, and that's a real business proposition. That's lawyers and management and all of that. Poland is the same. Poland's a great country to do business, but we did some business in Ukraine, and we did some business in Russia. I never stepped foot in Russia. Why did I not do that? First of all, and meaning is history for this, but I remember very well when the Russian-inspired Romanians used to torture my father. So I didn't think it was safe for me to go there. Secondly, I was told that I don't belong doing business in Russia. Why? I don't drink. Never have. Why? My father was a lifetime diabetic. He didn't drink. So I didn't. You can't really go into Russia, Mother Russia, and do a whole lot of business if you are not going to have a drink. You walk in a meeting, 10 in the morning, they're around the toast. Everybody offers a toast. But to get gone around the room, you might have had 7 shots of vodka. I haven't had a shot of vodka in my life. I had a guy who traveled for me, and certainly it was true then, it's true now. My guy, who was, by the way, Czech, he would go for me. And before going there for a week or 10 days to do business, he would book himself a stay at a hospital in Prague for detox, to extract the alcohol from his bloodstream. Because for a week he did nothing but drink and do business.
Yeah, yeah.
So the answer is we had a bunch of people. What we also had, I don't mind sharing with you, we had the kind of relationships that they were unusual for them. They couldn't quite figure out the American who spoke Hungarian, who said, "I'm not Hungarian at all, but I speak the language," who said, "I'll tell you what, I will buy you that mid-sized Mercedes if we can do this by Tuesday instead of 4 weeks from now." Mm-hmm. Guess what? I bought the car. I bought a lot of stuff. I create a lot of value for people for just trying to run it my way, you know? We don't do it that way here. That's not how we do it. Okay, so what's it going to cost to do it my way? No. The day we bought the Hungarian post office, the post office, the 10 million people, they never heard of this whole direct mail thing. And I said, "Tell you what, how much is it going to cost? This much. I won't pay it too much money." "Well, that's what it is." I said, "How about if we sort the mail down for you? So you don't have to do that. So I'm going to dump 1 million pieces of mail on you. You have to sort it." "What does that mean?" "I'll tell you what, I will sort it and deliver it in massive containers, sort it. All you have to do is give it to the carriers. Wow.
So, wow, I bet they loved you, these people. That's insane.
You know, Nat, as you know, machines or people who are illiterate in every language don't know the difference in barcodes. It's ISS 234, it doesn't. So we had crews here in Paramount, California, which is a suburb of LA, sorting Hungarian mail, Czech mail, Polish mail. It was a joy to see a largely Hispanic workforce sorting mail in all these languages.
Wow.
We gave them little barcodes. So I then said, I will disallow deliver my mail. I want a 60% discount. Guess what? We got a 60% discount. I need 57,000 envelopes for my Christmas season. You can have 400. It's the maximum give out. Okay. So what do you do? Well, you take one of you guys and give him a bunch of cash. And he gets in the station wagon and drives for 2 weeks, drives from town to town to town to town to town, city, and buys up every bag they'll sell. 5 here, 10 there, 20 there, 30 there. That's not enough. But by the time he got home, I got the call from somebody in the ministry who said, appears you guys bought up every bag we have in the country. You can't do that. I said, why? My God. They put up wanted posters in all the post office for my guys saying, do not sell him anything. I said, tell you what, 2 ways to do this. How about I make bags, I'll sell them to you. So I went to the bag guy and I said, dude, I need 200,000 bags. I said, I only make 50,000 for the season. I need 200,000 bags. And well, what the government going to say? Let me deal with the government. Because the detectives are going to charge you an extra 5 cents. No. So I then went back to the post office and said, look, I get it. Would you like to buy 100,000 bags? I'll need 100,000 next month. How much? I said, I'll discount it. So I discounted a few cents. They paid less for it. I paid more for mine. I had 100,000 bags. The post office thought I was the second coming of the Messiah. Now they have Christmas back. You know, it's all the same. It's all the same round of do the homework. And another thing you and I talk about all the time, don't consider failure an option. I've got money going out. I've got all these orders coming, but I can't ship them because the government has the bag. That's the approved bag, right? We don't have any. We can't buy any. So you buy the bag maker. You corrupt the bag maker and then corrupt the government. Now you have bags.
But you raise a lot of very good points here. I mean, this gift horse in the mouth thing, right? It's basically like just do the work, right? I mean, we have all these self-improvement gurus that, frankly, you know, I have no time for the majority of them. They want you to sit back and feel better about your life and do nothing. So then you pay them more money and you carry on this self-perpetuating journey of failure, right? And that's what they're selling. They're selling failure, a lot of these people. And I don't care if any of them are listening to this, because frankly, you know, if someone like Anthony Robbins turns around and says, hey, I was wrong, I've changed my approach and blah, 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 the rest of these guys, you know, there are some exceptions that are extremely good, but like, you've got to do the work, right? Like, you've actually got to do something. And in the beginning, you know, it's going to suck. Yeah, let's be honest. It's going to suck, right? When I did my first video on YouTube, right, it sucked. My YouTube channel, it still isn't big. Yeah, I've been doing interviews for six years now. And they don't suck as much as they used to. And I know I could improve certain things. I know I can improve certain things. But you know what? That's the beauty of continual work, that eventually you get better, better, better. Eventually you get somewhere, you know, like I was privileged to have the host of the Golden Globes to give me some media training, right? And she's a personal friend of mine. And I was so blessed. And so I'm so grateful to have had that kind of mentorship. And that goes for yourself as well, you know, like, the mentorship and instructions that you give me for certain copywriting and things is fantastically interesting. And I'm at the beginning of my journey, despite the fact that I've been trying to learn about it for 12 years, you know, and you don't just wake up one morning and become successful. Like, you built a business. It took you 19 years to take a bankrupt business, right, to $1 billion. I mean, this is not £1 billion. £1 billion is only 100 million. It's $1 billion. There's 1,000 million, right? So this is not a small feat, yeah. And some of the lives that you've changed along the way, that's what I know makes you tick. It's not the figures. It's not the ego. It's actually the feeling that you get from helping a lot of these people. And that's super exciting. I find that really, you know, that makes me tick as well. That's the whole purpose of this show. When I started this show, life was bad. Yeah. I was living in a studio, right? And I interviewed Stanley Tucci, right, with my green screen behind me. Yeah. Just hoping it wasn't going to fall down and he would see my mess, right? And this is life. Yeah. We suffer, but that suffering is there to, I believe, to encourage you to take action. I think suffering is good at times. I think that it can make you, you know, take action. I think it can really demoralize you as well. And that's when you need to reach out. You need to find the right people to talk to. And if you can't fix a problem yourself, you can't be afraid to kind of talk to someone who, you know, who may help you, someone in your family, a friend, whatever, even if they talk to you for 10, 15 minutes and calm your fast racing heart about your life. I think that, you know, it's a process, right? And every one of these 20 interviews that we did before I had the pleasure of launching this second series with you, Stephen, each one of these people, from Stanley Tucci through OBEs, SIRs, you know, dames, MBEs, hugely famous people, hugely successful people, they all share the same thing. And it's this continual refinement, which we talk about a lot, this continual, you know, okay, it's not perfect right now. We know where we're at right now. And when we finish something, we look back and go, all right, it was okay. It was good. A lot of people say it's good, but it's like, well, we know where we can improve, right? You know?
Now that what you just said is, among everything else you just said, I think it's so critical to what we are really doing. There are 20,000 books in print, maybe more, on how to feel about yourself and how to reconcile your demons, all that, and hopefully progress from there to being a more successful person, more successful in life, more successful in business. And that's hunky-dory. That's an Americanism I try not to use, but it's hunky-dory. It's kind of like, now we can write one of those. How easy is that? Somebody said to me, happens to be a very large chain of hospitals. I won't tell you the name is, but they start with an H. And said, you know, we really should put out a diet book. I said, okay. So why don't you put out a diet book? You have a lot of writers, you have a lot of lawyers, you have resources, you have massive resources. Multi-billion dollar enterprise. Well, you know, we need to come up with something different. I said, so I'm talking to this guy who happens to be the CEO of this group. I only know him because 25 years ago, I hired him to lecture my executives, administrative people, on substance abuse.
Oh, wow. I remember this story. Yeah.
Small world. So I said to this guy, let me ask a question. Diet, input, output, and the type of food you eat, is that not true? 100%. So your output has to be greater than your input, and the input can't be strictly animal fat. You know, a mix. If you have a decent balanced diet, you get sufficient output to somehow come close to your input. You lose weight. And I said, the best line I've ever written, which I've never done anything with, is I said 2 days ago, I wrote a line one night and said, this is here. Lose weight while sleeping. No diet, no pills, no exercise.
I laugh every time you say that. That is
an absolute guaranteed blockbuster success.
It's a winner.
No matter what I say after that, no matter what I write, no matter what I give away or sell, you are there going to be a ton of people who say, I'm going to buy that, whatever the hell that is. Lose weight while I'm sleeping. The only problem with that is that the lawyers told me that I would look really bad in prison orange jumpsuits. Okay? Now, that said, so I said to this man, I know exactly how to write a diet book. What do you mean? It's very simple. I'm going to go to the supermarket. And the end caps with their books, you know. Every end cap has a diet book. The greatest this, the newfound that, the Malibu diet, the Northern Lights diet, the Paleo diet. So I'm going to go do that, and I'm going to take those books, six or seven, not more, and put them right in front of me, and I'm going to like stand them up against this. I have three big monitors here, right? I'm stand them up, and I'm going to say, oh, chapter two, and this one, that's chapter four. Chapter seven is 19. I'm going to open all of those at the right chapter, and I'm going to paraphrase those things. We're going to create a 250-page book in a matter of days. That's going to be astounding. Fantastic. It's nonsense. It's all BS. You and I talk about the 20,000 books in print that tell me how I am, how I'm failing, why I feel the way I feel, you know, all that. And if I just reconcile all those wonderful feelings, look how I'm going to change my life. Schooler and Manning are a different school of thought. What we are doing does not do that. We're not going to beat up on you that, well, you know, you're really, I know why you're feeling badly. I know, well, you know, it's your mama, it's your daddy issues, it's your weight, it's your education, it's your bad divorce, it's your relationship with your children, it's you got fired. No. Our whole purpose here is to take you from where you are, where you're stuck, you feel failed, whatever the heck you failed. We say, great, that's where you're at. I'm not your analyst. I don't want to know that you were bedwetter when you were 10 years old. I don't care. I don't care that you want to jump off a bridge. I'm not, many a school are not you guys, but we are, people tell you now, here are our pillars of success. This is what you need to do to unsnap school awards, unstuck yourself. Because a lot of people, overwhelming percentage of people, feel stuck.
And we're not going to make you, but also, Stephen, but also, we're not going to make you feel better about yourself, right? We're not going to sit here and say, it's okay. It's not okay. It's not okay. You need to, and that's the main message is, look, you've got to take action. If you don't take action, you're going to be the same person, you know. It's like that. Who said that phrase? If you keep doing the same things over and over and over again, and you get the same result, then that is insanity, right? Who was that?
Somebody much smarter than me, but
much smarter than me. Was it? I think it was Einstein. It may have been Einstein. I think potentially.
Somebody much smarter than me. That's for sure.
My dad and my grandfather had dinner with Einstein once. There were about 100 people there, and they had to pay for a ticket, but they had dinner with Einstein. With Einstein, you believe that?
You see, crazy. It's a good thing to be a big-time educator at MIT.
Yeah, I think it was good. It was good for them, and good for me, right? And you know, I think that next time we're going to talk about the lazy man's way to riches. I think that's a fantastic story about Joe Carbo's book. He sold like 3 million copies of this book, and you know, wrote, he spent how long? I think he spent like, was it a month or 2 months, like writing the title for the book. And then
the advertising says he spent 4 hours. Not true. He went up to the mountains in the tiny rented cabin and sat there for 3 months writing what turned out to be a phenomenal ad and a really ordinary little book. That's at the point. You know, again, it's going back to what you said is what we are talking about, and I hope that a million people listen and watch, is you are where you are. You're stuck. You're not going to lay down on our couch and tell us your woes and We're going to go psychoanalyze you and we'll tell you how you went wrong. What we're going to do is tell you, here are our pillars of success. Here are our philosophies of life. It's what we think. Let me phrase that. What we know, and it's not arrogant, it's just that we know. We've been there, done that. We'll do it again. This is how you get unstuck. And no, no pain, no gain. No work, no work, no eat. It's so simple. You know, I'm in this rut because my mother, all that stuff, as I say, all that stuff is Swiss cheese without the cheese. There's nothing there. Nothing there. It's just, how do you go forward? I'll tell you what. I have been stuck in my life once or twice or three times or more.
Me too.
And I like to think that I say this with a conceit of arrogance, which I try desperately not to be. I always said, I can figure this out. Some of my best times were when I had the worst chance of succeeding. Megaforce Digigraph happened to be a great thing that worked out. Hey, how can love so wrong turn out so right? But that's not the point. And then I have walked away from a chit-chat with a kid that parked my car at the medical building, who was 21 years old, illegal here from Guatemala. I asked him, hey, where are you from? He told me, how's things in Guatemala? I haven't been there in 20 years. The kid told me. And then he said, well, you're doing this. This is me, my family. And I talked to this kid for like 10 minutes. And I walked away from that saying, holy God, I missed something very relevant. All the talking I do, reading I do, right? This kid said something so wise. Because wisdom comes out of the mouth of babes all the time. And then another Manningism, to newborn, every joke is new. He didn't know why what he was saying was not something we buy into. Holy moly, I came home and said, my God, I just picked up a serious piece of wisdom from a young man who was parking my car for minimum wage. And his day is a good day when I give him $3 as a tip instead of two. Because if I give him three, I just increase his take-home pay by 33%. So you and I talk about, okay, you're stuck. Here you are. Here is how we think you get unstuck. And quite honestly, you do this. I will now make an awfully big statement. You'll forgive me. If you listen to our pillar of success, if you listen to our philosophies of life, if you want to invest that 2 hours and that doesn't change your life, probably you can't read or write either. Or you are just so failed, you failed beyond repair. You know, I have to share this with you. The shows that, or the podcast we've already done, this is the third one. We also did a little promotional reel for this, which has not been made public yet. I share that with three people in my life. People know me intimately, including my family, my wife, one of my kids, and a friend. It is an amazing thing to get an email this morning from a guy I haven't talked in years and years, who said, where can I see this thing you guys just did? And I said, I don't know. I mean, I have a recording of the sound. How do you know? Well, I had dinner with Matloff. And he got it from his wife, who was talking to your wife. He said, I got to watch this. I said, tell you what, how about you pass it on to everybody you know? Now I'll give you a link when I got one. Back to my basic sound bite is, I believe without any arrogance that we're serving up some truly, truly essential value. Megaforce Digigraph is a great story about stepping up to it. And by the way, don't make no mistake. Once I stepped in it, the level of homework that we did was phenomenal.
Yeah. But you know, Stephen, Will, sorry to interrupt. Will Smith, he talks about that. He's like, you've got to just outwork everyone. He talks about that a lot. And I know he messed up. I know he had issues and he slapped the guy on stage. But you know what? The guy was sleeping with his wife, right? So, you know, ex-wife, right? Oh, now ex-wife, right? But like, I think he probably deserved it. And at the end of the day, yeah, maybe he needed a break, right? So, but you know, Guatemala, yeah, it's one of my favorite places in the world. I actually bought this ball in Guatemala from a little boy. I was there when I went traveling around the world, backpacking, when I was 28 years old. I had the privilege to do that. I did 33,500 air miles and changed my entire life. And I remember this boy coming up to me and trying to sell me this. And I gave him the money and I said, I don't want it. You can keep it. And he made me take this away. Yeah. And since then, I've actually been to Guatemala two or three times. I have a Kung Fu instructor in Guatemala City, Chinese Tai Chi full contact master in training Tai Chi, like 55 years. And I went and crossed the border. Right. It's a long story. I crossed the border from Guatemala to Belize overland to go and get my wedding certificate because I needed to get a divorce. Right. And that trip, I may tell that story if you ask me some point about that. It was insane. It was the most scary. There were guns. There were drugs. There were drug dealers and there was a boat crossing, and it would, like, put it this way, right? It was like the mafia, right? This whole crossing. It was the most scary moment of my life, actually. But I took a selfie, right? And it's like the most dangerous selfie in the freaking world. The captain of the boat, he was like the top gangster there, right? And he's the captain of the boat. And it was like, it was insane. But, you know, we'll get to that another time. I can't.
It's interesting that we talk, and as we say, we talk and talk and talk and talk some more. And we talk a couple hours a day, which has been phenomenally rewarding. It's rewarding for me, and I think it's rewarding for the thing we're trying to accomplish. But you know what? The world is remarkably small.
It is.
And I'm likely to at some point say, you know, the world is so small. If you're going to hide, best hide in plain sight.
Yes.
No. Did he just say that? I don't believe
it. Well, the police were hiding today. I was on my motorcycle. They were hiding right near my road. And there was, yeah, thankfully they didn't pull me over. I slowed right down. I didn't see them, but the car in front, who was accelerating extremely hard, braked really hard. And I was like, what the hell happened there? Oh, it's the police. And then I turned off and went up my road.
Now, as I think we're winding up here soon, but one of the things that I would like you and I to do, perhaps on an upcoming show, again, in the scheme of that horse is coming at you, you have to recognize opportunity. And then again, even if you know that the forest is full of wolves, the people who are bent to success, the people who say yes to success, are the people who do the homework. They weigh the probability of success and the size of that against the liability. And then they wade in that forest and forge ahead courageously. One day you and I are going to talk about, and so we can relate the story of, in the same idea as, whoa, how do you become the horse manure king of South America?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
In exactly 7 hours.
I like that story.
That's something you and I will tell one day.
You're completely correct, though. And the thing is that you don't know where that opportunity is going to lead, right? Like, I've taken all sorts of opportunities before and just done it, and it's just led to a totally different path. I mean, sometimes that's how, you know, you need to learn new skills. If you're listening to this and you've got no skills or very few skills, you've got no excuse. If you're sitting there listening to this and you're watching Netflix 2 hours a day or 1 hour a day, and you say, well, I haven't got time, like, you're lying to yourself, and you're lying to anyone that asks you that question. Look at yourself in the mirror when you say, I haven't got time, and then you'll figure it out. But look, I'm going to push the uh, push the outro. And thank you so much, Stephen. And we really appreciate everyone listening. And we hope you're going to tune in for the next show as well.
Thanks for watching and listening to Positive Personal Power Podcast. Get access to all our podcasts and other important updates on www.legacymediahub.com and subscribe wherever you listen and watch your podcasts on the Legacy Media Hub YouTube channel.